And a swing and a miss. Change up. He got him. Lucas Giolito finishes with an exclamation point. And gone. Career homer number 200 for Trevor Story. Swing and a miss. He got him. Wilson fans Mountcastle and the Red Sox shut out the Orioles.
Probably like Shibuzi said, one, here comes the two to the three to the
eighth strikeout.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
Good afternoon and welcome to WEEI Afternoons. Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens, Ted Johnson, and in just a few minutes, the manager of the once again surging Boston Red Sox, Alex Cora, will join us right around 2:10, fresh off that Giolito performance, which is in the midst of this era of dominance from his top three starters. We'll see Brian Bayo today. We got a Crochet Day tomorrow. Those three guys, Giolito, Crochet, and Bayo, should be the talk of baseball. There's certainly a big reason why your Boston Red Sox are now very much on a path toward the postseason, and depending on how much you like those guys, maybe on a path to a deep run in the postseason. So stick around. About 5-7 minutes from now, Alex Cora should join us from Baltimore. But first, guys, we need to touch on a couple nuggets, notes, things that have transpired in the last few hours. After cutdown day for the New England Patriots, Ted Johnson has to feel good because, well, for both things. He thought there were too many wide receivers on the roster. You don't have that problem anymore. Eight is now seven. Kendrick Bourne apparently requested his release after a trade did not come to fruition with anyone, including the Minnesota Vikings, who got Adam Thielen instead. And Tommy DeVito, Tommy Cutlets, backup quarterback, has been claimed by the New England Patriots. I'm sure his agent, Sean Stellato, local guy, Salem guy, is very happy about that. But not practice squad Tommy DeVito. Tommy DeVito claimed he's on the active roster. And Ted Johnson, you were a little worried about the backup quarterback situation.
I was. And so it's a more important position than I would say you guys tend to think it is. It's just, you know, he one hit away from having to play. And so I just think it's an important position. And they were thin. They were thin at that position. I just didn't like how they kind of managed that backup position. And so it's interesting that Tommy, you know, he carves him up in this last preseason game. And so that's the guy they go after. So it's going to be interesting. Is he active? I mean, he's on the active roster. Is he active week one? That is the interesting thing. And the Kendrick Bourne, when we were talking about yesterday about the roster, what were some of the bigger surprises? I had a hard time kind of coming up with one, but the one I did come up with was Kendrick Bourne. It just felt like, man, he wasn't really a big part of the offense before he got hurt, and then he got hurt and you just never saw him. So I didn't quite understand. And now maybe we know, maybe they were trying to get him traded, and maybe him knowing that, he said, you know what, let's just, you don't want me here ultimately, really, and I don't want to be here, so why don't we part ways?
Fitzy, any fear that now it seems like he could very much end back in San Francisco? Reports out of San Francisco already that they're interested. Remember, a year ago, he was part of that failed Brandon Ayuk trade that would have shipped him back there. Any fear that we're watching, I don't know, maybe Kendrick Bourne come November in the midst of a resurgent 50-60 catch season, and you're like, huh, he's better than the receivers we have.
Oh, for sure. And I'll be rooting for him every step of the way. Guy couldn't have been more of a consummate professional. Great energy. Used to make Belichick laugh. Always dancing. Made himself available to the media. Was polite, courteous, buoyant all the time. And when he was healthy, especially that first season, don't forget, in that playoff game where the Patriots got their lips blown off and their doors blown off and everything else blown off, two guys kept competing basically till the end. Mac Jones and Kendrick Bourne caught two touchdowns in that game. I'll always appreciate him. I hope he goes to San Francisco, where the Patriots got him from in March of 2021, and I hope he does well back there. And I can't quite honestly understand. I can see him not fitting in here, okay, but I can't understand how you can't work out a deal with Minnesota. What, like, you just can't take him for a seventh? Isn't that still better than nothing?
Well, I mean, Adam Thielen, I would assume maybe the comfort level with him gives him a it's similar to Bourne in San Francisco. I would ask.
It's apples and oranges, really, if they're both healthy.
How come you couldn't work out a deal with San Francisco if they're now going to swoop in and sign him? You couldn't do something.
2026 or 2027 seventh, maybe?
Or one of those late pick swaps where you send something and get something. I don't know. But I will be watching it because I am not, as much as I think there's upside to this wide receiver core,
I think this wide receiver core continues to be in that world where you're going to look at guys you could have had, should have had, would have had, and compare if this team underachieves. And if your guy, Efton Chisholm, if he looks overmatched 3 weeks into the season and you're like, oh, great, so we kept this guy over Kendrick Bourne, who worked really well in Josh McDaniel's system 4 years ago kind of thing. So I definitely have those comp fears down the road, Ted.
It is interesting, too. Just you think about this front office. You know, can they get deals done? You know, we talked about Breslow, you know, maybe not being able to get deals done at the trade deadline. Some of the deals he did make, it feels like maybe now it turned out to be better than we had originally thought. But, you know, why, you had Jennings on the table. You had Duggar on the table. You had Bourne on the table. Maybe you had Epps on the tail. I don't know, but they couldn't get any deals done. And so and so far, other than Tommy DeVito, they haven't signed players at the clearly at positions that they still are thin on. So you don't wonder why the lack of inactivity. What is going on? So that's just something for me to monitor with that front office. Just the inability to maybe do more deals. At this time is kind of curious to me.
Okay, we have some breaking news here from Dan Ball. We don't need the sounder because we don't have time for it, quite honestly. Dan Ball, what do you got?
Per Mike Reese of ESPN, the Patriots are planning to release wide receiver Javon Baker. So we go from 8 to 6 in a matter of moments.
And it's the two guys that we thought were sort of the last guys on the roster, first guys off the roster kind of thing. I know there were a lot of victory laps on social media last night, like Javon Baker was a special teamer now. He's not really a wide receiver. Everything he's done this summer, he's a special teamer. I guess you could say that, but he was still a wide receiver.
Are we going to find out soon, in the next minute or two, that he requested his trade?
Certainly would fit that with the social media crap and the profile.
We're just going into the front office. Hey, can I get a trade, please?
And we're going to get into this. Is that a bad sign?
That's like, not a good sign.
You got a lot of players that are like, I want out of here.
Yeah.
I want out.
Boy.
Shouldn't there be opportunities here?
Yeah, or just a different kind of – you got to set boundaries. You can't just – everybody that wants to get out of here, you shouldn't be able to get out of here.
Right. And remember there was a infamous, famous one a couple of years ago where Bill did that. Was it N'Keal Harry late in the process asked for a trade and Bill was like, no. Just shut up and do your job. I'll trade you when I want
to
trade you.
It feels like there's something to
that. There was definitely somebody. Yep. So it is interesting. So we do have a report from Mike Reese that the Patriots could be moving on from Javon Baker, cutting those 8 wide receivers down to 6 after Kendrick Bourne has already asked for his release. But joining us on the phones now here on WEEI Afternoons is the manager of the Boston Red Sox, Alex Cora. He is brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, the official supermarket of the Red Sox Radio Network, by Arbella, here for baseball fans, here for good, and by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when your drains don't flow. Alex Cora, how are we doing today?
Doing good. How are you guys?
We're good.
Good.
We watched a couple wins, and we've watched your top 3 pitchers. Roll of late. Obviously, Giolito last night, but there's this stat making the rounds that since June 10th, Crochet, Bayo, and Giolito are all in the top 5 in the American League in ERA. I know you're an eternal optimist, but did you see this coming, this stretch that they're having from your top 3 starters?
We trusted them, right? We've seen Bayo grown into a more mature pitcher. That transformation started halfway through the season last year. Gio, of course, been there, done that, right? It was just a matter of him getting to the rhythm of the season. And Crochet, I think a lot of people thought that this was going to be the case. A lot of hard work, a lot of adjustments throughout, right? With Gio mechanically, with Bayo repertoire-wise. But we're in a good spot right now. We're throwing the ball well.
So, Alex, obviously your plan for managing the innings and workload for Crochet has worked very well. Going down the stretch, considering how pivotal these 3 pitchers could and should be if and when the Red Sox make the postseason, will there be any sort of load management or workload plan for Bayo and Giolito as well?
No, not as of now. We feel they're in a good spot physically. Health-wise, they've been great. They've been able to bounce back, and we got work to do. You know, we still got 29 more games, and you know, a lot of teams are playing well around us. We still have, you know, our goals set in the division, so we got to keep going.
Alex, Trevor Story hits a home run last night. Every time he hits a home run, you guys seem to win. I think you're 18-1. Your patience with him has certainly paid off. He struggled to start the year, and now it just feels like when he's on, it just the offense is on. What do you attribute Trevor Story turning things around from the beginning of the season?
I think Trevor only has had one bad month, right? It was May. In April, he was really solid. In May, it didn't work out for him. And then since June 1st, he's been one of the best shortstops in the league offensively and defensively. We joke around right in the beginning of the season with his walk-up song, right? Look who's back or whatever it is, you know? And the guy, it's, you know, he, first of all, physically, he's at another level. You know, he's one of the best athletes, if not the best athlete we have. And honestly, he has simplified his mechanics. You know, in May, he became very internal. You know, everything, my hands, my leg kick, this and that. And then after that, he relaxed a little bit. I think he took one side of the plate and he started catching up with the fastball. And now he's hitting fastballs, he's hitting off-speed stuff, he's playing great defense, and base running-wise, he's elite. So we're very happy he's playing at this level.
Speaking of taking it to another level, your closer, Aroldis Chapman, usually we look at runs or blown saves. He's a guy that hasn't allowed a hit in, I think it's 13 appearances. Obviously, is throwing strikes. How did we get to this Aroldis Chapman late in his first season with the Boston Red Sox, late in his career? Obviously, I've heard you talk about his work ethic, but you know, is there something organizationally that has helped him get to where he's rolling along right now?
I think it started with he talked about last year. He lost around 20, 25 to 25 pounds in the second part of the season because he felt he was too rigid on the mound, and he wanted to be more athletic. He finished the season pretty well, working the offseason, a few things mechanics-wise, and then, you know, we've been preaching first-pitch strike from the get-go. Obviously, every organization, they do that, but I think Bells and the pitching group have done an amazing job with him. We've been able to take care of him as far as like innings and up downs and all that. So he feels fresh. And right now he's in one of those runs that is unbelievable what he's doing. You know, I played with Eric Gagne in 2004, from 2002 to 2004 with the Dodgers, and he was dominant. And, you know, what Chapman is doing right now reminds me a lot of Eric.
Yeah, bullpen has been a very pleasant surprise, Alex. And this season seems to have been littered with so many different pleasant surprises, outfield, infield, bench, bullpen, starters. And the latest one is Nathaniel Lowe, who you guys pick up and out of nowhere seems like he can't miss the baseball when he swings. Are you surprised by the success that he's had immediately with the Sox?
First things first, got to give credit to the front office and Bress and the group. Because as soon as the Nationals made their move, they start talking about Nate, a guy that he's a World Series champion, and he was a good hitter before. He struggled with the Nationals offensively and defensively, hit homers and drove in runs, but hopefully we can get the good version, and so far so good, and he can help us win a lot of games and hopefully win the division.
Alex, you know, people were wondering how Roman Anthony would do. You know, going into Yankee Stadium, and he showed what he's all about. Just your thoughts on Roman Anthony, how he's playing, and just what you're seeing in that young man right now.
Just consistency, not only on the field but in pregame. Just on top of his work, trying to get better defensively, offensively. There's still a few things that he wants to improve. I think we have to solve the lefty part of it, right? But he will. I think he will. The more bats he gets against them, the better he's going to be. But so far, so good, man. And in the clubhouse, communication with the coaches, just the presence, he's been awesome.
Red Sox manager Alex Cora here with us on WEEI Afternoons. We've talked a lot about the mix between leaders and young players, and that's come together in the clubhouse to seemingly really work. You just talk about Roman Anthony. Seems like he has a really unique relationship with Alex Bregman. What have you seen between those two, the bond that maybe they're building and why that maybe is at the forefront of what this whole clubhouse is?
Yeah, it's just with Alex, it's just different. He wants to win so bad that, you know, we just got here to the ballpark. He took the bus and he's working, you know, and he studies himself. He studies the opposition and he studies his teammates, you know, and he wants his teammates to be successful. He's not afraid to let them know, you know, where they're at with their swing or defensively. And that's what you need. You know, you need people like that in the clubhouse. I think between him and Trevor, they took that baton and they're doing an outstanding job for the group.
Alex, how has Walker Buehler taken being moved from the starting rotation to the bullpen? And do you believe he can be a significant contributor for the team down the home stretch towards the postseason?
Yeah, he's been okay. Just getting used to the routine, right? You got to be available every single day. So his routine has changed. I thought he threw the ball well in New York. Just one breaking ball that Jazz got down in the zone and hit a ballpark. But overall, the stuff was good. The bounce back is the thing that, you know, we have to pay attention. Obviously, with his injury pass, you know, we have to keep him healthy. But, you know, he was available yesterday, so that was good for us. And I do believe he's going to help us win a lot of games.
You mentioned earlier with Nathaniel Lowe tipping your cap to the front office, bringing him in. A lot of us left the trade deadline maybe disappointed, but one of the guys they brought in, Steven Matz, looks like he has become sort of a trusted part of your bullpen. What have you learned about him since you've spent some time with him and what he brings to your bullpen?
Well, first things first, man, he's a great athlete, which helps him to bounce back very quick. The other thing, he has a unique fastball. It's one very similar to Whitlock, but from the left side, and little by little, we have trust him in big situations. He's getting lefties out. I do believe he can get righties out. The other day, we let him face Goldschmidt in New York and got him out and helped us win the game. So, you know, he's having a lot of fun. He enjoys the environment. He understands, you know, what it takes to you know, finish the season, which is the most important thing, and I'm very happy that he's here with us.
And Alex, since nobody has, we've only seen a couple at bats. It was a recent call up and whatnot. What are your first impressions of the password? What's the kid like?
Yeah, he's a good kid, good athlete, good defender. Has faced some tough lefties, right? Hey, go ahead, kid. You're hitting fifth against Max Fried. Go get him. And then yeah, he was Rodon, but you know, he was having a good season in AAA. We needed him to be here, right, because of some roster stuff. And there's a good chance he'll start tomorrow against the lefty.
Alex, we couldn't let you leave this interview without a question about who's the next pitcher coming up from the minor leagues. Peyton Tolley seems to be killing it. Lou Maloney calls him the Piglet, is very excited. How soon do we see Peyton Tolley?
We got to be patient, you know. There's other stuff that has to happen, right? And we're in a good spot with the big league roster, but obviously, like I always said, man, these kids, their job is to, you know, keep improving and keep showing us that they belong to the big leagues. And if we do believe they're ready, they're going to contribute here.
Before we let you go, you said Steven Matz is having fun. How much fun is Alex Cora having? The last few Augusts seem like they haven't been a lot of fun for you. We talked about teams fading, falling out of contention. You must be having some fun.
Yeah, especially because our fantasy football team is ranked number one with the draft. We had a great, I mean, it was amazing. We got Chase, Jacobs, Jackson, Walker, Metcalf, and some others. So we were ranked number one, the coaches. Now we just got to put the work, and hopefully we can win the championship.
And is this the league where Veritek decided the order with the BP session, the picks?
Yeah. It was not the order. It was the order to choose the order. So there was no, I mean, we didn't take advantage of the situation, but we were the number two pick, and we got, I think, you know, we got the best player in fantasy football, Jamar Chase, and we just got to go now and hopefully win the championship. That's the most important thing.
All right, so we're angling for two championships, fantasy football and real-world baseball. We're just going to pull it all together this fall,
life
right?
Balance.
You imagine? Oh, you imagine if we do well, that'll be sick.
All right, thanks, Alex. We appreciate it a little bit.
All kidding aside, we're having fun. It's a good group of guys. In New York, a lot of fans from Boston were at the stadium. Here in Baltimore, the same thing. So hopefully we can continue and, win the whole thing.
Sounds good. All right, Alex, we'll talk to you next week. Good luck tonight.
Later, guys.
All right, see you.
Thanks, Alex.
That was Alex Cora, manager of the Boston Red Sox and the manager of a dominant fantasy football team, apparently, that got the best player in fantasy football. A little advice for us here. We have our draft in the Keefe League tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night, 9
apparently,
o'clock.
Apparently, Jamar Chase is the best player in fantasy football.
According to Alex
Cora, Okay,
he's
Alex.
Number one, yeah.
Yeah.
Fantasy, he's not that good.
Fantasy football, big part of MLB.
Clubhouse. 100%. It is huge in Major League Baseball. We'll react to Alex Cora, everything he said about his baseball team, his pitching staff, his bullpen. All that is next here on WEEI Afternoons. But first, Dan Ball has what's trending.
The exclusive home for Patriots Monday and Friday.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Here's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com. The Red Sox shut out the Baltimore Orioles last night 5-0. Lucas Giolito went 8 shutout innings to win his 9th game of the year. Boston has won 5 of its last 6. They are 13 games over 500, matching a season high. Game 3 of that series is tonight. First pitch at 6:35. Brian Baio will start for the Sox opposite Dietrich Enns. And you can listen to the game on WEEI FM 93.7 and across the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's, go shopping, get rewarded. MassMutual pregame show with Christian Arcanis tonight at 5:35, and Will Fleming and Will Middlebrooks have the call of the series. New this afternoon, the Patriots have released wide receiver Kendrick Bourne after he requested to be released. Wide receiver Javon Baker has also been released by the team. Also from today, the Patriots claimed quarterback Tommy DeVito off waivers from the Giants, as well as cornerback Charles Woods from the Rams. No Patriots players were claimed off waivers today. On that note, players that have signed with the practice squad include running back Terrell Jennings, tight ends C.J. Dupree and G. Scott Jr., linemen Mekhi Butler, Jack Conley, and Alec Lindstrom, outside linebackers Braden Swinson and Truman Jones, inside linebacker Cam Riley, and cornerbacks Miles Battle and Brandon Crossley. And from around the NFL, All-Pro safety Kyle Hamilton and the Ravens reached agreement today on a 4-year, $100.4 million extension, the largest for a safety in NFL history. Also, the Vikings brought back Adam Thielen on Wednesday in a trade with the Panthers, and Chiefs wide receiver Rashee Rice has accepted a 6-game suspension for violating the NFL's personal conduct policy. I'm Dan Ball. This is Trending Now on WEEI and WEEI.com. More afternoons coming up right after this.
WEEI Afternoons with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
Will there be any sort of load management or workload plan for Baio and Giolito as well?
No, not as of now. We feel they're in a good spot physically. Health-wise, they've been great. They've been able to bounce back, and we got work to do. You know, we still got 29 more games, and you know, a lot of teams are playing well around us. We still have, you know, our goal set in the division, so we got to keep going.
That was Alex Cora, manager of the Boston Red Sox. Apparently, according to social media, walking the warning track at in Baltimore while talking to us in full uniform.
Walk and talk at the same time.
I was very well done. And good news there for all of us, I think, that there's no plan to maybe limit some of the innings of Baio and Giolito with how good they have been. Also good for Giolito, who I believe is 20-something innings away from vesting a mutual option with the team for next year. So he's got some financial interest in that. But I did think, Fitzy, good question, because, you know, you look at Giolito, how good he's been. And when he's on these stretches of dominance, you're like, wow, they legit have three starters. And then you look at a game like last night where it was Maddox-esque. Like, the game was almost over. It felt like, you know, I hadn't even finished dinner after getting home, and the game is almost over. I know it was an early start, but he was flying, gives you 8 innings, then has that battle to end it, an 11-pitch battle that I think drove him just over 100 pitches to, like, 104 pitches. And you're
he was teetering right there.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I thought that was a gutsy performance right there.
And I didn't totally understand it, but watching the post-game interview, you know who he credited with winning that battle?
Who's that?
St. Bregman. Said something to him about something to do with his changeup late, and he's worked on something, and he used it there to get the strikeout in that battle. And
try to tell you.
you did try to tell us, and you actually did a terrible job because you actually undersold.
Oh, I undersold it.
How important Alex Bregman is, and he is the rare player. And I hear everybody talk about this that the intangibles might be as valuable as the statistics, the tangibles, the defense, the whole thing. And so when we joked about, did you pay $40 million for leadership? Yeah, you kind of paid $40 million for leadership, and it's worked quite nicely. But
the guy's like a batting coach, a pitching coach, fashionista, great third baseman, clutch hitter, icon.
Cora,
I mean, what doesn't he do?
Cora touched on it, and I would urge you to go to WEEI.com right now. Our friend Rob Bradford, who we'll talk to Friday at Fenway Park, wrote a story. He did a podcast, Baseball Isn't Boring, with Giolito, and Giolito was saying this team is different than any team he's ever been on, which was more starting pitchers are tight with starting pitchers, field players are tight with field players, bullpen is tight with bullpen, and you didn't really mix with advice and leadership and all. And he's like, this team, and he said it starts with Bregman. Bregman tells starting pitchers, Bregman tells relievers, oh, I saw this, I saw that, I was watching something and saw you doing this. And Giolito said that's unique. And Giolito's been around. Giolito's not like some spring chicken. He said that's unique to this team.
You know what? There's a demarcation line. I think we all know what it was, where it felt like things changed. And I remember I did a three-point stance on it when I came. We did a show out at Fenway. And we've been doing shows at Fenway all year. I did not see the amount of cars in the players' lot like I saw in the players' lot soon after Rafi Devers was traded. I'm just being honest. Mm-hmm. And they went on that 10-game win streak. And everybody got to the ballpark early, and partly is because you heard stories of Bregman was meeting one-on-one with guys at the Fenway to go over the scouting report for that day's pitcher, and guys were just more invested, just getting there early, and it just things started changing at that point.
Absolutely, and even Chapman, Bregman's the huge part, probably the tip of the spear, so to speak, but. Cora just raves about Chapman and the work ethic, and he works out in the morning, and then he takes a nap, and then he works out before the game.
The guy is a beast.
Oh, absolutely.
He's got muscles on top of muscles.
100%, and is having an all-time season. But I think all of this coming together, this to me feels like the classic example of coaches and GMs feel like they can mold teams and clubhouses. They can't. They can try. Yep. Like they can put a piece in there. But you don't know exactly how it's all going to work out until they're a month into the season. And then you're like, we got rid of Devers, and this really came together nicely.
The players got to take charge.
Absolutely.
They got to be the ones that are going to police the locker room and set the tone. It can't be the coaches.
But as much as Alex Cora was excited about, let's see, his starting pitchers, his awesome bullpen, which has added Motts. He's become a trusted guy in there. All of that, he was seemingly most excited about something we're going to do tomorrow night, and that's a fantasy football draft. Here's Alex Cora talking about just how well his fantasy football draft went. Before we let you go, you said Steven Motts is having fun. How much fun is Alex Cora having? The last few Augusts seem like they haven't been a lot of fun for you. We talked about teams fading, falling out of contention. You must be having some fun.
Yeah, especially because our fantasy football team is ranked number one with the draft. We had a great, it was amazing. We got Chase, Jacobs, Jackson, Walker, Metcalf, and some others. So we were ranked number one, the coaches. Now we just got to put the work, and hopefully we can win the championship.
And is this the league where Veritech decided the order with the BP session, the picks?
Yeah. It was not the order. It was the order to choose the order. So there was no, we didn't take advantage of the situation, but we were the number two pick. I think, we got the best player in fantasy football, Jamar Chase, and we just got to go now and hopefully win the championship. That's the most important thing.
All right, so we're angling for two championships, fantasy football and real world baseball. We're just going to pull it all together this fall, right?
Balance.
You imagine if we do both, that'd be sick.
That would be sick. Tremendous. And Dan Ball, you noted it. He starts there. I give him the whole baseball thing. Like, past August, the team has kind of faded. That
must heartfelt
been
question out of you.
Yeah. And he's like, yeah, but fantasy football. He skipped right over the baseball part to the important thing, fantasy football.
He's having a good time. You think about this team in end of May. I'd be curious what their lowest point in the season was. Probably end of May where they had the lowest odds to make the playoffs, 23%.
Yep.
And now they're at 93%.
And I don't know what is easier for him right now, the clubhouse stuff we just talked about, or just the actual managerial stuff. When your starters, Fitzy, are going six-plus innings and have an ERA that's, you know, two or below, and then you hand it to, I don't know, Whitlock and Chapman, a guy who hasn't given up a hit in like 13 appearances, that makes your job pretty easy as a manager.
Yeah, he's got to be having a great time right now as far as it goes in terms of like fun. Who doesn't want to watch Whitlock and Chapman lock it up? Who doesn't want to watch these three starters? Who doesn't want to watch St. Bregman doing his thing? By the way, I love the idea of Bregman doing like 5 to 10 minute consultations, like taking meetings with everyone. Like, does he have like candles and he's got a little curtain in the corner and you get special little meetings, like almost therapy sessions with him? Yeah, Ted, you've got the 210. Andy, yeah, you've got the 220. I got 240 because Dan Ball beat me to the 230. Like, this guy's incredible.
I mean, that's kind of what the picture they've painted.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, but do you think Dan Ball always jokes, like, any good therapist, you lead with a positive before you criticize the negative or whatever. You think he does that?
Yeah.
First of all, Roman, you're doing a great job.
I think he does.
Seeing pitches. Now, if we could just cut down on the strikeouts or something.
What do you think he says to Jordan Hicks?
Not enough, apparently. He's got to say more to him. But
can I – you know what? Of course, I always think of the question after the interview's over. What do you think is his biggest question mark? Like, if you're out, what is keeping him up maybe at night? I have an idea. I'm curious what you guys think. Is it the middle relief? Is it someone not hitting? What do you think the biggest issue is?
I would still say the inconsistency of his lineup. That's what I would say.
Okay.
The fact that there's times where they're rolling and it's like, I go nine deep and these guys are all good. And then there's the next game and it's like, boy, after Anthony and Bregman, we kind of stink.
You know what? I think that three spot.
In the rotation?
Nope.
In the lineup.
In the lineup. Oh, with Duran or the lack of Duran.
Jan Duran at through the three, just sometimes it just doesn't, I feel like it's, you know, he had a home run the other night in the first game against the Orioles that clinched it, but just he isn't consistent enough in that three spot for me to feel real good about him being there in the lineup.
Can I throw something crazy at you? Because I kind of agree with you. You know who has the longest on-base streak in Major League Baseball right now?
Jaron Duran.
I believe it's 19 straight games he's gotten on base. And I believe you. So, like, that's one of those where you're like, wait, he gets on base every game? And yet I feel he also has, like, an average of 208 in that span or something. So I get but the reality is every single game for nearly 20 games, he's gotten on base. So, but that's some of that inconsistency. Like my guy, Yoshida, I watch him and I dread watching him come to the plate. Did you watch last night later in the game when I think someone must have told him, like, sit on a pitch and try to jack it out of here. And he swung from his tippy toes. That's not who you are. You're not a power hitter.
Nope.
I'm not looking for you to hit the warehouse. I'm looking for you to not ground out to second base, to maybe do something mildly productive. That guy still infuriates me, even in win streaks. Yes, Dan Ball.
You haven't taken your victory lap on a great game for David Hamilton last night.
I was waiting for someone else to break. I thought it would be a little immature
of
me. Yeah, I didn't want to be braggadocious or braggy or anything like that.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, he helped you win a baseball game. Now, to be fair, his stats were inflated. He popped up to the left fielder who was like, shortstop, you got that? Hey, shortstop, come get shortstop, why are you not close enough? They melted. The Orioles looked like they need a St. Bregman. They looked like an immature, young baseball team, and their manager he had that stoic, I know I'm on camera, so I can't show it, but boy, are these guys pissing me off. The machine guy, who has one of the best names in all of baseball, the third baseman.
That is pretty bad.
When he's like, I'm just going to step on third for the third. Wait, there's not two outs. I got to throw to first. Oh, he's safe. Great. And then the pop-up, I think, came right after that, where my guy Hamilton steals a double. That ball should be caught for Fitzy's Little League team, never mind the left fielder for the frickin' Baltimore Orioles in Major League Baseball. But I'll take it. D-Ham could use a few cheap stats. Yes, Dan Ball?
From our PA today, Zach Coe, the machine was DFA'd within the hour.
That tells you how mad the manager was.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. So he did a good job. He stayed stoic in the situation, but his power was felt shortly thereafter.
Yeah, he was coming to the end of grief, the acceptance of, this guy is gone.
Yeah, oh my God, because that was embarrassing. And it actually helped the Red Sox. They score a couple extra runs. You don't need Chapman, it's the opposite of what happened last weekend. Now you save him. Now you could have Chapman tonight if you need him. So everything going well for Alex Cora and the Boston Red Sox. They're rolling. The fantasy football's going great. All coming up roses. 617-779-7937 if you want to react to our Alex Cora interview. Up next, we have a reaction of his own. Will Middlebrooks, Nick Fitzy Stevens. They had a budding feud. Where's it going? Where's it been? We'll tell you next here on WEEI Afternoons.
That'll be sick.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
I am calling for Roman Anthony to try to maybe alter that swing just a little bit and give the Red Sox a little extra punch, pop, and power in their lineup.
Good! Roman reigns supreme.
Thanks, Fitzy, for the bat path suggestion. Means a lot.
That sounded sincere.
Yeah, we'll go with that. That sounded sincere. That was Roman Anthony thanking Fitzy for his suggestion in that portion of that three-point stance we just heard, that the next step in his swift evolution as a fun young player with the Red Sox was a little power, and then he hits a bomb to the upper deck in Yankee Stadium. Little pop, little punch, helps them win games. And yet, at the time, Fitzy took a lot of heat on social media for his stance. A lot of people, Fitzy, were not happy with you, right? There were a lot of mean tweets and comments.
Oh, DMs, Andrew. DMs.
So the DMs, and one of those people that questioned you.
So real quick. The DMs. So you don't have to be following that person to get DM'd anymore?
You can have your DMs opened, right? Isn't that how it works?
I leave them open. As a fan of the people, I leave them open to
ladies, he's available.
So, okay, I got you. All right, it used to be you had to follow them to be DM'd. Okay.
Right, so you have the option, and I have continued to leave them open. There were a few times during the Roman Anthony saga where I thought about maybe locking them up, but
and okay. One of the people that responded to you I saw on Twitter was Will Middlebrooks, correct?
Mm-hmm. In addition to Lenny DiNardo.
And Lenny DiNardo. Oh, so Nesson was all over you, huh? The Nesson crew was all over Fitzy. Some with some statistics, and I believe, just to clarify the situation, Fitzy, you said Will Middlebrooks unfollowed you?
Yeah, I was always very happy that Will Middlebrooks, someone I'd been a fan of for a long time, was a follower. And then I just, after he sent me this litany of stats, the stats of which he gleaned from somebody else, no less, I clicked through and I was like, wait a second, the follows you is gone. Son of a bitch.
So last night on the Mass Mutual pregame show, Will Middlebrooks was a guest with Christian Arcand, and Christian Arcand asked him about this situation. And Fitzy, have you heard this audio yet?
I got to be honest. I got a bunch of text messages when I got out of football practice last night. I have not. Straight up, I have not heard it to date.
Okay, well, you're about to hear it now.
There's rumors floating around this building here that you are not friends with Fitzy anymore, and that you blocked him on social media, or maybe unfollowed him on social media over the Roman Anthony thing. Do you want to clarify that?
I don't even know who Fitzy is.
You don't know Fitzy?
No. I don't. I definitely didn't block him. I don't know. I don't know. I think that's all that is a rumor.
Okay.
We're coworkers.
I thought everyone was getting along great.
I don't
great.
Even know what was the take?
It was that Roman Anthony may need to adjust his swing to swing for more power.
Oh, yeah,
turns out that's what he did.
Yeah. Okay, thanks for reminding me. I'm actually going to go block him now.
Well, he did adjust his swing, though, right? I mean, there was an article about it last week.
Yes, I just don't think it was like a hot take and be like, oh, this guy, his swing is a disaster. Like, no.
I'm not sure that's what he said, but okay.
I know. I'm just poking the bear.
All right.
It's fun, though. Thanks for bringing that up.
Sure. I'm just trying to stir it up myself.
I was well handled.
Do we believe him?
No.
Do we believe him? Did he doesn't know who Fitzy is?
No, because then he goes, we're just coworkers.
Right.
And I'm like, how do you know you're coworkers if you don't know who Fitzy is?
Yeah. What's up? What's up with that, Fitz?
Thanks, Fitzy.
I don't get that.
I don't know. I don't understand how a take that at the time during that three-point stance I thought was relatively innocuous. I'm not telling the kid to go back to baseball school or join my kids at the batting cage after work tonight so he can figure out what he's doing with the stick in his hand, Ted. I literally was just hoping that the next step in his evolution would be to add a little pop because he had, at that point, two home runs. I think he's got four or five since. That's great. And for that, I'm the scourge of Sox Nation.
I kind of side with Fitzy. Let's settle down, Francis. It's a little bit of an overreaction.
Oh, you don't know Fitzy.
Don't you think? Don't you think it's a little bit of an overreaction?
Yes. This,
Fitzy, I think it is kind of innocuous, what he said. Like, what's the big deal here?
And then at the end there, he said something to the effect like, it wasn't a hot take. Like, it's not like his swing was a mess. Fitzy never said his swing was a mess. He said, actually, he's really good, but the next level is hitting the ball out of the ballpark a little bit.
I got your back
power
on this one, Fitz. I got you, bro.
Thank you, Ted.
Will Middlebrooks went with the old, do I know you, bro?
Yeah.
Not the first time we've gotten into an argument here on WEEI Afternoons with outsiders because they didn't know us.
Yes, I just don't think it was like a hot take and be like, oh, this guy, his swing is a disaster. Like, no.
Who called it a disaster?
Like the fact that I also like the fact that Ted, in defense of me, used one of my favorite quotes from Stripes, Lighten Up, Francis.
Lighten up, Francis. You know what? I think you might be in Will Middlebrooks' head
a little bit.
So
I'm just going to throw it out there, Fitzy. Uh-uh. You and I, Friday, will be at Fenway Park.
Yep.
And this has become a tradition on this show to bring our feuds into the studio at Fenway Park. So Will Middlebrooks, open invitation. In the past, Will Fleming took the invitation. In the past.
Yeah. And that was successful.
Jared Carrabas took the invitation.
Not so much.
And the Fleming one was successful.
So we're one for two. Will Middlebrooks, if you have time, if you're available, come on down. We can talk it out. You can look at Fitzy and figure out who the F he is in front of your face.
I don't even know who Fitzy is.
You don't know Fitzy.
I'll tell you who Fitzy is. The guy who was supposed to be hosting a travel show on the Big Ten Network with Jenny Dell 7 years ago, and then I got bumped for a food editor.
Now we're getting to the meat of it.
Keep her name out your mouth.
I was going to say, we're bringing wives
in. I was the Big Ten Network's choice, and then 3 weeks later, it's like, sorry, we went with this food editor from Food Network. I was like, you another son of a bitch.
I just want to point out, I've never had a feud that include wives being involved. This is very, what was it, Ryan Clark, RG3, went down the wife road at one point.
I'm just saying, I felt like I was going to be Middlebrooks' family.
Ted, you're very quiet over there. Okay. Sure. Good segment,
sure.
Ted.
Sure.
So, Will Middlebrooks, if you want to figure out who Fitzy is, if you want to lighten the mood there, if you want to come on down on Friday, it's what we do, right? We have feuds, and then we stomp them out real quick and move on, and then we're all big friends, and we can talk a little socks. Hopefully, they're still winning games at that time. 617-779-7937. If you want to take a side in the Middlebrooks versus Fitzy feud, we are happy to do that. It sounds like Ted is very much on Team Fitzy.
I'm on Fitzy's side.
Wow.
Yep.
Called Middlebrooks Francis.
My man.
Although Ted won't be there Friday, which tends to change the reaction of these guys that
Easy
are in
for
feuds.
Me to talk tough huh, when I'm not going to be there.
Will Fleming walked in and immediately backed down because my bodyguard, Ted Johnson, was there to defend me. Jared Carrabas came in with no Ted in the building, and he just keeps wanting to fight. And he was flexing and sweating and going at it. So we'll see how Will Middlebrooks handles it. Up next here on WEEI Afternoons, I'm going to double down. I had a very positive experience yesterday when I said something very positive about the Boston Red Sox. It's so much nicer when they just agree with you on social media than call you a moron and other M-words you can't say on the radio. I didn't go far enough when I talked about Aroldis Chapman yesterday, so I'm going to take it a step further up next in my 3-point stance.
I don't even know who Fitzy is.
You don't know Fitzy.